The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list, from toys for the kids to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook to electronics for everyone. You can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love and cash back is automatically added to your account. And you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozz's Lessons in Confidence. Today, I want to talk to you a little bit about the future of humanity and whether it's going to be a good or a bad thing. Because there's a lot of threats to humanity. You know, there's that global doomsday clock, and apparently around now it's about 40 seconds to midnight, and it's all determined by scientists and all the various technologies that go on, and they kind of use their judgment to sort of figure out what's a threat, what isn't, and like how big this threat is compared to this. For the past sort of 80 years or so, since the invention of the atomic bomb, we've been slowly like living on thin ice. We've been living on very, very thin ice. I mean, there's been so many incidents where, you know, America's accidentally dropped a nuclear bomb on their own country like 4 or 5 times just because it fell out of a plane. And they haven't found some of these nuclear bombs either. One of them fell quite close to, I think it was Miami or something like that. Like, and if it had gone off, it would have like wiped out one of their own cities. So that would have just been pure accident. Then there's the whole thing in Russia. The name of the guy, Stanislav Petrov, that's it. He basically went against the orders that were given to him from upper command to launch the nukes because they had a system error which found various satellites or debris or something and interpreted that as a nuclear strike from the Americans, and they needed to strike back. And, you know, if you're working for the Soviet Navy, you do not tell your supervisors and your superiors, no, I will not follow this order. And he didn't follow the order. And it turned out that he was very right to do so. And now he is the reason that I'm making this video. He's the reason that you're watching this video. He's the reason that all of us are even still alive. And, you know, I'm quite eternally thankful to him for being there to stop this, because if it had been someone else that might have just followed that order and just launched those nukes, you know, I don't know what we would be living in now, whether it would be an apocalypse or whatever. I mean, because the idea of a nuclear apocalypse is quite, you know, scary. You know, the idea that all of this would just disappear and it, like, all the leaves would no longer sprout from the trees, all the trees would die. Nuclear winter would engulf a large cloud over the entirety of the globe for 20 years or so, and the radiation, sure, it wouldn't, maybe the radiation wouldn't last for centuries or millennia, but it would at least last for like lifetimes. And, you know, maybe we would survive a nuclear holocaust. It's not about whether we would go completely extinct or all life on Earth would completely be wiped out, but it would be an extinction level event, in, you know, the same way that the dinosaurs got blasted by that comet, or the comet that came before that, that started off the dinosaurs, or all the various extinction level events, the mass extinction events that have happened throughout Earth's history. This would just be another one, but it would be unique in the fact that it would be one species on this planet has actively caused this. It was caused from an internal thing from this planet, rather than just happenstance where, you know, the planet was in the wrong place at the wrong time and the comet just happened to get lucky, you know? So the future in terms of nuclear Armageddon, you know, I feel like there's two ideologies around it. I can't remember the names of them, but one of them is essentially that the fact that we have nuclear weapons has allowed for peace to prosper. And certainly we do live in more peaceful times than we have at various points in human history. You know, notwithstanding the invasion of Ukraine and Palestine and like the M13 rebellions in the Congo and like, you know, all the general things that are going on. Like, I'm not saying we live in a perfect world or anything, but we are living in quite a peaceful time comparatively, where wars are nowhere near as destructive as they once were. I mean, after World War II, we had so many systems in place to try and prevent that kind of thing again. We got the Geneva Convention out of it, and we got, you know, all the UN out of it, and we got all these kind of global stopgaps, essentially, safety precautions, essentially, to try and make sure that we don't repeat the same mistakes that were made in World War II, because we can't afford to make those mistakes again. During the Korean War, I can't remember the name of the general. Is it Patton? I think it might be Patton. I can't remember. But he basically wanted to use nuclear weapons in a tactical way to win the Korean War. And, you know, at that point, we didn't really fully appreciate the deadly power that came from nuclear weapons. Obviously, we had an idea because, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki had happened, and the US and the Soviet Union by that point were both engaging in very frequent nuclear tests. But, you know, say if we had done that, and say we had normalized nuclear strikes in a tactical sense, which I've heard like odd little things about the idea of the Russians and the Ukrainians doing that in the Ukraine war. And then there's this quite dangerous idea that I've heard that, oh, all of Russia's nukes, they're all so old that they probably don't even work. And it's like, listen, I know that Russia turned out to not be quite as strong as it was, as people thought it was, considering that they've had such a hard time invading Ukraine. But that's not to say that they are like completely without power, that they have no nukes. I mean, they have the most nukes in the world. And even if 99% of them non-functional, that still leaves us with 1% of like 7,000 nukes, which is 70 nukes, which is a lot. That's enough to wipe out basically every major city in Europe. It's enough to cause a nuclear winter, because if those missiles were to launch, then you know for a fact that the US and the UK and France would launch their missiles straight back. And that would cause nuclear Armageddon because of the mutually assured destruction thing, where, and that's why I almost feel a little bit weird about nuclear weapons, because, like, yeah, sure, we want to take them out with us, we don't want to go down without a fight, but we're at that point now where that kind of strike would just wipe out an entire civilization, and there's nothing left to conquer if you were to wipe that civilization out, and there's nothing to do, nothing to gain. And I just feel like it's certainly really interesting, because on the one hand, people like to argue that nuclear weapons are one of the main causes for the current peace and prosperity that we actually have, you know, comparatively compared to wars of the past, because World War I and World War II were taking us down a very dangerous path as far as warfare goes. And if we hadn't invented nuclear weapons, say if we lived in a pre-nuclear world, then, you know, World War III would certainly have happened, and it wouldn't be a nuclear Armageddon, it would just be another world war where, and we've seen the amount of damage the first two world wars caused, millions of deaths and, you know, genocides and all that kind of fun stuff, and that would have just carried on at the scale it was. I mean, nuclear weapons are the reason that, you know, people are scared to invade certain places. You know, you won't invade a country that's got nukes because they'll just obliterate you, and like, you know, no one would consider invading NATO, for instance, because like then all the NATO would come around and just like wipe the fuck out of you. Like, you know, there's so much that you could argue in favor of nuclear weapons as a peacekeeping tool, despite their immense potential for chaos, destruction, death, and suffering. But because they're so new, I mean, nuclear weapons are more recent than my grandparents, you know? And I'm not, like, old particularly. And, you know, if you're watching this and you're maybe 50, then your parents have a decent chance of being older than the first atomic bomb. And that's how new these weapons of mass destruction are. And that basically means that we don't think long term. We talk about how this might bring peace and prosperity and like how like the last 8 years have been comparatively peaceful. But the 1800s was relatively peaceful compared to the 1700s, where you had, you know, 7 Years' War, you had the Napoleonic Wars, you had so much stuff. And then that all kind of fizzled out around the 1820s. I'm not saying war stopped or anything like that. Don't get me wrong. Like there was, and colonialism was a massive cause of death and destruction again. So it kind of just changed in style, essentially. But there was that gap from, I want to say, like maybe the War of 1812 or the Napoleonic Wars, the last major wars of Europe to World War I, there was that time. And that amount of time is actually longer than the time since the first atomic bomb, which we would consider this new time of peace and prosperity, the most peaceful time in history, as people like to say. And that means that we don't think long term, because that's not even 100 years of time that we have had these weapons. And that's so little time that we've learned to understand human nature, when human nature and humanity has this power and this ability to just at a whim destroy everything, you know? And that is terrifying. I mean, North Korea now has multiple nuclear weapons. Israel is rumored to have nuclear weapons. And I can't even think, Pakistan, I think, has nuclear weapons. India, I think, has nuclear weapons. China definitely has nuclear weapons. France has them. Iraq doesn't have them. But, you know, there's countries on both, let's call it both sides of the general geopolitical fight for society, essentially. The East and the West, to really boil it down to a basic, like, primary school level. You know, you've got the people on the West, like America and NATO and all that bullshit, and then you've got the people on the East, which is, like, as China and, like, you know, the Arab world and places like that. And then you've got the Second World, I guess. Or, sorry, the Third World, which is, like, you know, all the countries that were neutral. And that sort of terminology in itself is kind of outdated and kind of implies that these developing countries basically just are irrelevant to the global discourse regarding our future as a civilization, as a human civilization. You know, do we want globalism, or do we want nationalism, or do we want, you know, something in between? Is, you know, global institutions to try and enforce peace and prosperity, are they good, or are they tools for evil? And those are questions that I don't have the answers to. You know, there was times when I thought I had the answers, but, like, I'm just some twat, you know, that, like, goes around parks and stuff. I don't know. So, and I feel like everyone now sort of, with the access to the internet and stuff, it's very easy to feel like you know a lot more than you do, and to treat that knowledge as if it's got any kind of prowess, when you don't even know if what you're reading is or viewing is actually true, or if it's propagandized, or maybe it is true but it is also propagandized, or if it's just completely made up, or maybe the facts are completely true but they're being presented to you in a way that's designed to manipulate you and your actions and to make you think in a certain way. Like, it's very easy to get various stats to make someone think, oh, these people are bad because look at these stats, when you could also show some completely different statistics that are both, you know, both of these sets of statistics are true. They're not doctored in any way, but it's the way that you present this information that kind of shows, that, you know, helps manipulate people into thinking about others in certain ways, or thinking about ideas in certain ways. And I feel like with the future, Now we don't even have to just...
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Worry about nuclear weapons. We have to worry about, one, the internet and, AI on the horizon. And scientists with that global doomsday clock I mentioned earlier, now they agree that that is actually more of a threat than nuclear weapons are in the long term. And when nuclear weapons first came out and they destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those nuclear weapons are like sticks of dynamite compared to the bombs that we have now. Like, we have bombs that are thousands of times more powerful than those ones were, which could cause almost infinite destruction. Tsar Bombar, for instance, was it 56 megatons? And it was actually reduced down from 100 megatons only because its original yield would have with certainty killed the pilot of the plane that dropped it, even with all the time delay measures. Like, they put a parachute on the bomb to make sure it got to its destination much, much slower, and none of that stuff would have been enough. And even with the yield of 56 megatons, there was still like a 50-50 chance that it would have killed that pilot. Luckily it didn't. Now we have AI, which is already beginning, and I think now we are at the point where, like, say there was an Oppenheimer equivalent for AI, he would have made his "Now I have become deaf" speech by now. And people, like, even the discourse around the idea of AI being a danger to humanity is almost kind of kitsch and old hat and just kind of boring and redundant. It's not like the fun thing to do anymore. Because at the moment, like, AI is fun stuff like ChatGPT or DALL-E or whatever, these little things that just, make bits of content, and the debate at the moment is around whether this stuff is theft or it's stealing from the original creators of the work that these AIs were trained on. These AIs were trained on, the entire internet and various parts of the internet. Say an AI was trained on this film, the director of the film maybe has some legal credence to say, they don't have legal credence at the moment, but they have maybe some moral credence to say that, you making something with an AI that's basically based off of what I made is stealing my creation and just repurposing it in new packaging. And I don't disagree with that, but I feel like it's not the most important or most interesting conversation, because we are so far at the beginning of AI, and we don't know what's going to happen in the future. We have no idea. Anything could be on the horizon, whether super intelligence, conscious AI is possible, or maybe it becomes something else. Maybe AIs, AIs are already, and bots and stuff are already very prevalent on the internet. And, you see news articles and stuff that are written by AI, and that's been going on for over a decade before ChatGPT and stuff like that. And now it's only become a consumer thing where consumers can actually use it to their advantage, and that's why you've got so many, scammy kind of, "Oh, use ChatGPT to help your business and grow," and all that sort of bullshit. And it's like, shut the fuck up. But AI, for instance, the thing that really scares me that I remember reading was the idea that you could code a disease on an AI, and I don't know how exactly that works, because I can barely turn on a computer, let alone code a fucking AI to make a disease. But basically, you could craft a disease that is specifically designed to cause as much destruction. Say, maybe you could make a disease that only targets specific races, or you could make a disease that only targets people that maybe have like a certain bank balance or something like that. Say you wanted to kill all the poor, you could just do that with this disease. And like, I don't know how exact that would be or how that would be achieved. And I really hope that I never learn how that is potentially possible. But it's all stuff that we need to figure out. We need to answer these questions that we've left unanswered, even from the nuclear age. We never bothered to solve the question of whether mutually assured destruction can cause the countries that are taking part in the nuclear arms race to be so scared of their own weapons that they would never consider using them. Because it's only been under 100 years since nuclear weapons were first invented, and we have no idea whether they can function in various stages of the human and societal experience, shall we say, where, you know, we've gone through a couple ups, you know, dips and valleys of, you know, the economy and stuff like that. You know, we had the post-war golden age, and then we had the 70s, which was a bit down. Then we had the 80s and 90s and 2000, where it was a bit up, and now it's going down again. And we've had a little bit of that, but we've not had enough time to really see a development in civilization. I mean, society in the 1940s, sure, while it's not exactly the same as it is now, is much more akin to what we have now than, say, the 1940s compared to the 1740s. And, you know, going into the future, society is only going to evolve and progress at a much faster rate. And what that means is that we're going to have to figure out how to juggle these deathly Armageddon-inducing inventions with the speed at which we are evolving technologically. And we're going to have to answer those questions, because if we don't, then we'll learn the answers the hard way, which will involve a significant amount of us dying or living in endless suffering under, say, some kind of robotic apocalypse where the AI robots are the masters and we're their slaves or something like that. I don't know, and I don't pretend to know, but all I can do is try and raise these questions and hope that there's people out there on the internet that know more than me that can maybe use some of this video to raise discussions about the future of humanity, because I feel like humans don't think long-term. You know, I saw an article that said government plans to get rid of gas-powered heaters by 2035. And to me, 2035 feels like a really long way away, and it's not. You know, it's only, like, 10 years ago, it was 2015, when, like, Leafy is here and iDubbbz and stuff were knocking about, and 2035 isn't that far away either. 2050 is not really that far away. I mean, 25 years ago, I'm 25 years old, so all you do is double that. And I'm not particularly old, so all you do is double my age and as someone who's not particularly old, and then bam, you're at 2050. 2100 isn't really that far away, all things considered. Someone that's born today will be 75, so it's only one, you know, lifetime away. Not even one lifetime away, slightly less than one lifetime away. And how are we going to use these tools for good in the long run? Because they're going to come no matter what. We can't stop technological progression, because people have tried that in the past and it doesn't work. So we need to figure out how we are going to use this stuff responsibly, or we are all going to die. So that's going to be the video. I'm going to end it on a nice positive note there. Thank you very much for watching. Please leave your comments in the description, in the comments thing below, about what you think about the future of humanity. Do you think we're too short-sighted? Do you think that AI or nuclear weapons or maybe something else is the real threat? Do you feel like man's inhumanity to man could be solved by technology? Do you feel like we're generally going in a good direction, even if we have some setbacks? Or do you feel like we are heading towards certain doom? I haven't even mentioned climate change in this video. That's another one. So, yeah. Godspeed to the future. And if you're watching this from the future, let me know how the future went. So thank you very much for watching, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye. Also, I decided to film here because it does look like an apocalypse around here. Like, you know, apart from that, there's some leaves on that tree. They'll be gone. the water would be a bit like murkier. It's already a bit murky. And those plastic bags would be gone. They'd be blown away by the nuclear blast. It's a tip. There's a fucking license plate that's sat there. YE19RZT. So anyone's car who's crashed into that, leave your comments below trying to claim it back. The DVLA will be inspecting this comment section regularly to make sure that you get your car back, because that's clearly an issue. Right, bye-bye. Oh, lessons in confidence. And today, I want to talk to you a little bit about saving money and how you can do little, unique, subconscious kind of tricks to sort of make yourself save a little bit more money. So what I started doing, when I went to France on a little holiday last week, what I did is I totaled up every time I tapped my card, right, I would jot it down on this little note. I've got a notes app and it says like ferry, £43, bus, £1.75, right, stuff like that. Cappuccino at Lewis Station, £3.20. You know, soup on ferry, £5.09. You know, every time I tapped, I would just note it. That, and I built that up as a little sort of tradition, routine, like impulsive thing that I would do. And whenever I would do that, it meant that I would spend a little bit less money, right? And now that I'm back from France, I'm just keeping it up. But what I'm doing now is I'm rounding it up. So, for instance, yesterday I went to Lidl and I spent like £14.10, something like that. So I've written on here, Lidl, £15. And then today I went to Lidl and I bought just this bottle of water, which was 45 pence. So I put Lidl, £1, right? And because I'm putting down more than I think, I'm rounding up so much, right? It might get my brain to sort of go, oh God, you're spending a lot of money. You need to spend a little bit less money. But I'm actually spending less than that, right? So, and it's the same way, like when I think about my bills and stuff, I think about like the absolute peak that it could possibly be. I just presume that it's going to be like way higher than it really is. That way, when it comes, I'm a little bit relieved. I'm like, oh, okay. I thought I was going to have to pay £250. I only have to pay £130. You know, that I'm paying £120 less than I thought I was going to spend. And it's like, I kind of know that it's going to be not 250, but I make myself think that it's going to be £150. So I spoke to my friend the other day, right? And he's doing this thing for January where what you do, he's got this like big folder sort of booklet kind of thing for like CDs and stuff. And what he's doing is he's every time he spends a little bit of cash, he takes out some money from the ATM and he takes out a tenner and he puts it in one of those little sleeves. And he's just putting one £10 note or £5 note or £20 note in each sleeve. And then eventually when he fills the book up, it'll be somewhere in the vein of like £2,500 to £4,000 that's in this CD case. That's kind of how he's doing it. And he's treating it like this is just the money that I was going to spend, but now I'm putting it in this little book instead. You know, I've already spent a little bit, right, by cash, and all the change and that kind of thing goes in the sleeves. So he's kind of just tricking his own brain into saving money. And I think that's a really good thing to do. There's banking apps and stuff that can help you do that if you want to do it through that. But I'm not interested in that kind of thing. I don't really do online banking or anything like that. I prefer to go into the bank and do everything that way. And I like to just do little weird things to sort of save money in that regard. Just ways of tricking my own brain. You know, like, for instance, I like to get my non-alcoholic beers, right? And if I get four of them down the road, it costs me £4.50. But if I go to Sainsbury's, I can get 12 for £8, which basically, the way I see it, is I'm getting four for...
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels, but my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal, game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
So I think of things in that kind of regard. I think of like, Like when I went to Bulgaria about 4 years ago on a holiday, right? I went to get tobacco that I would have bought anyway in England at £20 a pop. I'm now getting it for £5 a pop, and the amount of money that I'm saving there ends up meaning the holiday is essentially free, because the amount of money that I've saved on the cheaper tobacco has gone on to the holiday, so I've gotten a free holiday out of it. And that's the way I kind of think about monetary stuff and bills and money in general. Like, when I go to the pub sometimes, because I don't drink, if I just get, like, non-alcoholic beer, that costs basically the same as a normal pint. So if I get four of them, I'm spending, like, £30 in total, plus, like, the trip back and that kind of thing, right, which I don't really want to be doing. But if I go and I just get maybe one, right, and then I just get water after that, water's free, so I've managed to get, like, an entire night out, which cost me, like, £5 total, right? But I've had a full experience nice night out in that kind of regard. So you can do weird little things to save yourself money, just little tiny things, just to, like, if you skimp in certain ways, like maybe you like getting, I don't know, the crisps at, like, the McCoy's crisps, right? But they're like £1.25 for a packet, when you could go to Morrison's and get their version of the crinkle cut crisps, right? Which maybe it will cost you £2, but you get like five times as many, and that ends up saving you money. So think about where your money is going, what you're spending it on, how are you doing certain things. And I think if you can just kind of keep up little fun ways of saving yourself money and just accumulate things in various different pots, like don't just have one bank account, have one bank account and then maybe, like, I don't know, you got cash under the bed, and then maybe have another bank account for like a specific type of thing, like your savings account and then your current account. But then you might have your work money goes into your current account, and you take money out of that account into and put it into another account, and that account is for just your bills, right? And then you take some money from this main account where you get paid and put it into a third bank account, and this one is just for your fun money, right? And if you run out of fun money, then you can't have any more fun, is a good way of thinking about it. So, you know, don't just have one. Also, the benefit of having multiple bank accounts is all these banks like to do these like switchover deals. So what you can do is you can take one bank, shut it down, and open it up in a new bank account. And depending on their terms and conditions, you'll end up getting like £150 within 30 days or something like that. And I'm not going to name any banks or anything like that, because this isn't sponsored by any banks. I'm just telling you it's a good, I've done it like 10 times and I've probably made like a total of like 1.5 grand. Just out of like places I'm going anyway, get there like an hour early and just nip to the bank beforehand and just like, just sit there, have a bit of a chat with them, ask them some questions. It's not, because you're sat in front of like a bank teller, someone who knows finance, so it's a good opportunity to just ask them weird questions as well. So like say you're thinking about something, say you're thinking about putting your money in the stocks, you can just quickly ask them, like, what do you think about trading 212? What do you think about crypto? What do you think about this thing that I'm thinking about? And they might go, yeah, don't do this, but do this, try this, have you thought about this? And you can take what they're saying on board, because they are experts, you know, they know what they're talking about, and they've done this a million times. So you can do all sorts of little things to save yourself money, and to you can even make little bits of money. Like, I've got this app called Zifit, I think it's called World of Books now. And what I do, whenever I'm walking around, if I just see like some books that someone's left out, that kind of thing. People leave books and CDs and stuff all over the place for people to just take. Go up and scan them with your phone, right? Quick scan, doop, doop, right? And it might come up, oh, this one's worth 30p, this one's worth 10p, this one's worth 50p. I've probably made, in total, from doing this for about 3 years, I've probably made about 300 quid, right? Just off doing that. And, you know, it's not much work. If I culminated all the work that I put into it, it would be like maybe one 8-hour shift's worth of work, maybe two 8-hour shifts worth of work. All it is just getting the books, putting it through, and then all you need to do is get a box. Just find a box. You can even find boxes out there. You don't have to buy a box or anything like that. You get boxes when you get deliveries and stuff like that. Just keep the box and use it and just put all the books in it. Write the trading number on, and it'll tell you where to take it. And it might just be in town. Just take the box to town next time you need to go to town for whatever reason. And, you know, say you're going there to do some shopping, well, you're not going to be bringing the box back with you, so you can take the box there and then take the shopping back. There's so many little ways of making like money and just fun little things and ways of saving yourself money. And like you don't need to be boring about it. You can have a bit of fun with it. Like my friend who's got the CD case, and he's having a bit of fun with the CD case and seeing what he can do with regards to saving money. And he's putting his little £10 in there. He sent he showed me it and he was flicking through. He probably put about like 150 quid in it already. And I was like, I was really proud of him because like that's 150 quid that wouldn't exist if not for this system. Well, obviously it would exist, but he wouldn't have it, you know? And it's money that he wouldn't have if not for just trying something a little bit weird. And he's sticking with it. And by the end of the month, he might have something like 600 quid in there. And if he keeps it up, by the end of May, he might have like 2-3 grand in there. And that 2-3 grand can go towards maybe like, I don't know, getting a PlayStation 5 or I don't know, whatever. You know, whatever it is you want to spend that kind of money on, because that was basically fun money at that point. Or maybe it's just a safety net. Think about safety nets as well. It's very important to have a safety net with regards to your money. You want to make sure that you've got like maybe a specific bank account that's just like for emergencies only, and it's got like a grand or 2 grand in it, right? Because there's going to be points where a rainy day comes and you want to save for a rainy day. And when it starts to rain, you want to make sure you've got a roof over your head, right? So take money from there for the emergency, put it towards the thing. And then stock up on the emergency fund when you have money to spare. So, yeah, basically, I'm just talking about ways of saving money and just having a bit of fun with your money. And just, yeah, I'm not here to preach to you. Like, if you find ways, weird ways of doing it, let me know in the comments below, because I'd love to hear your experiences with these kind of things. And I'd love to know what kind of weird little things you do that are just like quick little bits of cash, you know? I used to go on rev.com, which is like this typing, you type out subtitles for people. And that was like, you know, a nice little £10 a day every now and then. And it would be like an hour's worth of work. And that's just like, you could do that like on the way to and from work, or I could just do it like if I was bored at home and there's nothing to do. And I didn't really feel like getting up and going around, walking around and stuff like that. You know, little things like that. You can just find stuff out there and just have a bit of fun with it. So, you know, the world is your oyster. And if you like oysters, then, you know, bon appetit. So thank you very much for watching, everybody. Have a good rest of the day and take care. Bye-bye. Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozza's Lessons in Confidence. And this is a bit of a hard video to make because it's about a very controversial subject, and I'm not going to please everyone with this, and you know, all that standard disclaimer sort of stuff. Vegans, right? Now, I'm not a vegan, but I was raised vegetarian, right? I was born 1999 and I was vegetarian until 2016. So it was the way I was raised. And, you know, I'm kind of thankful for it because it made me be able to live without meat if I choose to. But now that I'm not a vegetarian anymore, I can have a bit of meat if I want. But I don't have vast amounts of meat, really. Like, I might buy a pack of bacon once a month. I might buy, like, some smoked salmon. Might have a burger if I go out to a restaurant or, like, something like that. I don't really eat McDonald's or Burger King or anything like that. But, you know, I have. I had a Big Mac just to have one, and they're not that good. And, you know, I do like meat, but it's not the best thing ever. I don't think it's the tastiest thing in the universe. And so I feel like, say if veganism was just enforced on everyone, personally, I wouldn't be missing very much. I mean, I like a steak, I like some bacon, they're all right, you know. They're good foods. I don't think they're my favourite foods. I'm not someone that, like, I still eat a lot of the corn sort of stuff. Corn's like a meat substitute. And when I was growing up, it was the only meat substitute. Now you've got all sorts, like Beyond Burgers, and like every supermarket has their own brand sort of version of, you know, non-meat sort of things. And an argument that's used against vegans is, oh, well, if you're vegan, why do you want to try and replace meat? And it's like, a lot of vegans aren't, like, saying that meat doesn't taste good. Like, I think a lot of vegans would agree that, like, bacon's nice, steaks are nice, right? But they disagree on a moral level with, you know, the idea of farming an animal, factory farming, industrialized factory farming. When I was trying to search for my first, like, proper paid job, I was on Indeed, which is like a job searching website, and I saw a listing for a job called a chicken sexer. And that kind of attracted me because I just thought, sexer, I wonder what that is. So, and they also paid like twice as much as all the other jobs that I was looking at. So I thought, okay, maybe that'd be interesting. I could be a chicken sexer. So I looked up what that actually means, and what a chicken sexer does is, so they stand at a conveyor belt, and there's a load of baby chicks that come in. And basically what they do is they pick up a chick, they shove its finger up its arsehole, and then they figure out from that if it's a boy or a girl. And if it's a girl, they plonk it back on the conveyor belt. And if it's a boy, then they throw it into this grinder thing, which just kills them instantly, turns them into mulch. And they just do that. They do that every day, all day, for probably like 9 hours a day, 5 days a week. And I looked at that and I thought, Jesus, that's grim. And I just tried to imagine myself in that environment doing that sort of thing. Could I do that? Even like, because I like chicken, I like the taste of it. It tastes quite nice, you know? I don't think it's the most interesting meat in the universe or anything like, but it's nice little food, especially put some paprika on it and you fry it, it's quite nice. But I just thought, oh God, this is awful, that. The idea of doing that for a job, you know? And then I started thinking about, you know, the fact that I'd recently stopped being a vegetarian, because this is like 2017, I stopped being a vegetarian the year before. And I kind of thought, maybe I should go back to it, because, you know, I wasn't raised vegetarian, I don't think necessarily for moral reasons. There was a bit of moral, a little bit of diet, a little bit of everything, right? And it was just the way that I grew up. And, you know, I occasionally would have the urge to try a bit of meat. I tried one of those pepperami fucking things that school kids would have, and I just thought it was disgusting. I didn't understand why anyone would want one. But I'm sure if I grew up with meat, I would like them, and I'd feel nostalgia for them, but I don't. And, you know, I feel like when people make the argument that, ooh, vegans think they are morally superior, like, I kind of think that they are morally superior, because, right, so eating an animal does involve killing an animal, right? Whether you do it or not, either you hunt the animal and you kill it, which I don't really have a massive problem with. Like, I'd rather not. I don't particularly want to shoot a deer between the eyes and then feast on its carcass. But I don't, like, have a moral issue with that, because that kind of is part of nature. But I do have an issue with industrialized factory farming. Like, the idea that, you know, you see any of the footage from inside these sort of farms, and it's grim stuff. It's not fun to look at, and it kind of ruins your appetite. Like, I wouldn't recommend watching any of that sort of stuff while you're eating some meat, because, like, if you don't feel a little bit repulsed and want to kind of put down your fork, I don't know, does it say something about your morals? Like, because there's... Oh, oh, oh,
O'Reilly! Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. There's various arguments against veganism, one of which is, you're causing loads of death anyway from insects, and plants can feel pain, and, you know, all the insects that are, like, incinerated from the farming of wheat and stuff like that. But then, you know, how do they feed the animals until they get slaughtered? Well, they feed them on grain and stuff, and they need to grow the grain, so those insects are going to get killed anyway. So there's less insects being killed, and plants can feel pain. I mean, I'm sure they can, right? But I think reducing the suffering overall is a good thing. And then maybe in 100, 200 years or so, we can work on that problem of figuring out, you know, plants feeling pain. Is it right to just uproot a plant and just, like, rip it apart and eat it? You know, we could sort that out after the fact. Maybe do one issue at a time. And I feel like a lot of people want to just solve every issue at the same time. And if you can't solve everything at once, then there's no point in solving anything. And that always frustrates me a little bit. And I don't know. I've been thinking about going vegan again for probably about a year and a half. And I've sort of gone, like, maybe a couple months without eating meat. Not like I quit meat or anything. I don't even really notice it. I just stop buying it. And then I wouldn't say I relapse either on meat. I just kind of have it if I go out to a restaurant or something. Or I might, like, walk through Lidl and I think, oh, I fancy some bacon. And I'll get some, and, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'm not a vegan, but I do kind of respect vegans and think that they are morally superior. They've got their moral ducks more in a row than I do, right? Because I can acknowledge the horrors that I'm taking part in, and yet I still continue to be complicit in them. And I still engage with this industry that causes untold suffering. You know, the deaths from chickens alone is like in the billions per year, something like that. I think there's a website where you can stay on it and it will like tick up every time an animal gets killed, and it's just like tick 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 tick, tick, and it, you know, you stay on the website for a minute and like all the counters for like basically every animal are in the millions, apart from like quite niche things like whales and stuff like that, and camel. Apparently you can eat camel, and that's quite a like common thing to eat. I don't know. It's a hard subject to tackle, this, because I know that I'm not going to please everybody. I'm probably going to annoy the vegans by, you know, being aware of their issues whilst not joining them in, you know, not eating meat anymore, because I'm continuing to be complicit in this industry. And I'm not going to please the meat eaters either, the carnies, as vegans like to call them. Right? I'm not going to be in their good books either, because I'm basically sort of saying that they're morally inferior to these knobheads over here that are apparently loud and like won't shut up about how they're vegans. But I've met vegans, and to be honest, it never really comes up unless, like, you know, it comes up naturally in a conversation, and even then it doesn't last very long. You know, you sort of go, no, I can't have that. Oh, why not? Oh, I'm a vegan. Oh, fair enough. Why is that? Ah, just, you know, for moral reasons, you know, just don't really like what's going on with all the factory farms and stuff. And it's like, ah, yeah, that's fair enough. I watched that documentary about it. Oh, yeah, what's the documentary called? Oh, I've put it, and then you take your phone out and you put it on the little notes app on your phone, and you say you're going to watch it later, and then you never watch it later. You know, and that's about it. I've never had, you know, the typical internet, like, meme of, like, you know, how dare you? How dare you not be a vegan? Ah, I'm so offended. Ah, I've never had that. And no one I've ever met seems to have had anything like that. So, you know, I'm not going to say it never happens. I'm sure there's knobhead vegans out there, just like there's knobhead everybody's out there. But I've never seen this issue. I've never seen this being a problem. And I don't know. I feel like it's a good way of delegitimizing people who care about certain issues to just make fun of how they act about it. Like, if they shout or if they scream, then you can just not bother responding to what they're actually saying whilst they're screaming, because, oh, they're screaming it, so obviously we shouldn't bother listening to them. I don't know. It's a hard subject to tackle, and I don't think I've tackled it with any real dignity, but I don't know. Yeah, it's just, I've been thinking about going vegan again, and there's a few things that come with that. One, I like milk. Right, and I don't really like any of the replacements for it. Oat milk's okay in coffee, but it's not good in tea. Nothing really works well with tea, so that's kind of a problem. No vegan cheese tastes nice whatsoever. I haven't found a single one that tastes nice. And those are the two main hurdles for me, milk and cheese. I like both of those things. Eggs, I could live without eggs. I've kind of stopped eating eggs in the past couple months. I've had a few, but I feel like now I could go without eggs, if I so chose, right? If I just said no more eggs, I could stop eating eggs. But I don't think I could stop drinking milk, and I don't think I could stop having cheese, because I like cheese. Like, it's just a nice thing. I'm not a particularly, like, connoisseur of cheese. I'm just talking about cheddar and Parmesan. But, you know, I like those. And I do like to have a bacon sandwich once in a while. I like having a salmon on toast, because that's a really quick, easy sort of snack meal slash meal. It's like more than a snack, but it's not quite a meal. So it fills you up enough, but it only takes like 5 minutes to make, and it's kind of healthy. So all of those things kind of come together, and it's like, yeah. And like, I'd never stop taking cod liver oil, because, you know, like, if I kind of need it, I'm not going to like not take things that I actively need for my health. But also, like, I've heard the argument from vegans that you shouldn't even try to reduce your intake, because that's not good enough. Like, we need to all be vegans. Like, vegans don't like vegetarians, and I was a vegetarian for the longest time. I've never been a vegan, but I've been vegetarian, and the difference, I think, isn't that massive. Like, vegetarian is on the path to being a vegan, right? So I think that they should kind of be a bit more cool with one another, because, you know, it's better than nothing, and you are reducing suffering overall by being a vegetarian. And sure, you are still complicit in you know, an industry of evil by buying milk and eggs and cheese and all the other stuff, and, you know, getting a leather jacket and stuff like that. But I don't know, it's better. If we were all vegetarians, right, I think we would be on the path to ridding ourselves of the amount of suffering that goes on, and we wouldn't have to have jobs like chicken sexers anymore, because that is just such a actually, we would still need jobs like chicken sexers. So maybe it's not good enough to just be vegetarian, but it would at least be better than the system we have now, right? You know, I just think about that job, and it makes me feel sick. The idea of sitting there all day, every day, just murdering fucking baby chickens for very little pay. Like, it was only 40 grand a year. And it's like, that's not good enough, you know, to basically be like the equivalent of like the Nazi officer at Auschwitz. Like, sometimes I've walked down the meat aisle at Sainsbury's, and I remember distinctly, I was going through a hard point in my life, and I walked down the meat aisle, and I just saw little Auschwitzes everywhere, just like genocides going on all around us. And it really kind of fucked me. And what really fucked me was I didn't stop. I didn't stop eating meat when I realized this. And I thought, why? Why have I not done that? Why? What's wrong with me? And I'm sure there'll be people in the comments that go, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, this is how we're made. We're made to eat meat. And it's like, I don't think we are made. I don't believe in God. And I don't really believe that we're here for any, like, purpose, particularly, other than to try and make life as sort of generally nice for ourselves as possible. So I don't believe, like, that we're put here for a certain cause. And there's the argument that, like, oh, it's natural. But it's like, well, not all things that are natural are good for you. There's poison ivy. There's snakes that can kill you with one bite. There's fucking all sorts of stuff. There's, like, flies that can inject their larvae into your skin, and then the eggs just, like, patch inside you and eat you from the inside. And it's like, there's tapeworms that can, like, electric eels that can, like, go up your knob, and, like, all sorts of stuff. And it's like, well, clearly just being natural isn't good enough to you know, get the stamp of quality, you know? But at the same time, do we want to live in an industrialized... Well, we already do live in an industrialized world where everything's kind of fake, and in terms of, like, chemicals in the food and all that sort of stuff. Because all the meat you see in the supermarkets has got, like, all sorts of preservatives and stuff sitting in it. Like, so I don't know. Because I had a steak the other day, right? And I thought, because the steak was kind of, like... There was two steaks in the packet, and I had one the day I got it, and then I waited like 5 days to eat the other one. And I was a little bit worried about eating the second one because it looked a little bit, didn't look off, but it just didn't look the best anymore, right? And it was the day before the best before day, and I was kind of like, oh, God. And as I was sort of having it, I kind of thought, I'm really worried about getting food poisoning here. And like, whenever, this is why I cook with like corn rather than chicken, because if I want to reheat something, I don't really want to stick something of chicken in the microwave. Like, reheat it. It freaks me out because I don't want to get food poisoning. I got food poisoning by trying to make a chicken soup, and I was ill for like a week, and it was miserable, and I was like puking my guts out. It was awful. Did not like that one bit, and I don't really want to have that again. And corn and like meat-free alternatives, I don't really have that worry, so it's kind of all right. I don't know, this is a very rambly video. I do recognize that, and I haven't come to any good conclusion particularly. I've kind of just raised a lot of questions, and if you have the answers to any of these questions, please leave them in the comments. Let's try and get a respectful discussion going back and forth on this issue, because I'm sure some of you agree. I'm sure you all disagree with me in various ways, and some of you will disagree with one another on how you disagree with me. And let's try and sort of come together and figure out something, some kind of consensus. Because surely even reducing this, you know, intake of meat by just a little bit would be something. And I feel like I'm putting my reputation on the line here a little bit, because this is a really touchy subject. This is almost the equivalent of like doing a video about Palestine or something like that. And it's like it's not that I don't care about Palestine, but I don't know. I feel like you hear about it all over the place. So you come to these sort of videos to get away from that sort of stuff. And maybe you come to these videos and you don't want to be lectured about how you should stop eating meat, you know? And I don't intend to do that. And I'm sorry if that's the interpretation that you took from this. And I'm also sorry if you're a vegan watching this and you just sort of see this and you think he's spreading like a bad message to people. And it's like, I'm spreading the best message I can. I'm just trying to figure out the answers. I don't have everything figured out, and I don't try and pretend to. I just want to understand how we can better our world, and that's basically it. So please leave your comments in the thing below about, you know, are you a vegan? Are you a vegetarian? Are you a meat eater? Why are you any of these things? Have you even thought about it? Do you think about it much? Do you find that vegans are loud and annoying? Do you find the reverse, that carnivores, even though they're not carnivorous, they're omnivorous, but like, I know there's people out there that do the, like, ooh, I only eat meat diet, but let's just forget about them, because they are completely irrelevant to the, because they're just a joke. Do you think that, like, veganism is good? Do you think it's bad? Do you think that maybe vegetarians are all right? Do you think that they're not doing enough? Do you think that we're all complicit in a system of oppression? I don't know. Leave your thoughts in the thing below, because I haven't come to any good conclusions out of this, so I'd like to see what you guys think. So thank you very much for watching this video. Hope you managed to get something out of it. Feel like you probably didn't. And take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.